welcome to Home Space and Reason, a podcast about creating a home that thrives.
Hi there, I'm Christina Browning, your host.
If you know your home could be so much more than it is, I usually discuss home functionality, aesthetics, and automation because I geek out on every subject imaginable regarding our homes and yards. I wanted to take this opportunity to dive into the spooky aspect of a home, the haunting of a home, and the energy that can remain long after people have left. Due to the spooky nature of this particular episode, I want to caution parents. All of my previous episodes have been kid-friendly, and although I don't cuss, this episode might be too scary and graphic for younger children. Parental discretion is advised. I'm a realtor in Portland, Oregon, and so I've been in a lot of houses. And one thing I've noticed for sure, no matter the square footage or price tag, sometimes when I walk into a home, it feels off. And I'm not talking about home functionality now. I'm talking about an uneasiness, like maybe I'm not alone. Whether you believe in ghosts or not, I would imagine you have fond memories of sitting around a fireplace somewhere at some point in your life and enjoying a good spooky ghost story. Let's talk about the haunting of a house and the psychology of what makes a house feel haunted. Pour a cup of hot spice cider and snuggle in, because later I'll share some real-life stories and talk about the inhabitants with Dr. Christy Sumner, a paranormal investigator, where she shares the details of an investigation in a house on a lake. Something is still there, moving around, lurking in the shadows, making curious, unexplainable noises, and never leaving.
Oh my God, what is that?
Haunted houses push buttons in our brains that evolved before houses existed. If you're a skeptic of ghosts and their ability to occupy a home, check out the show called The Dead Files on the Travel Channel or streaming through Hulu or on YouTube. I'll tell you what, it will shift the way you view things for sure, because there's evidence here like I've never witnessed. Homeowners contact this team of two to solve unexplained paranormal phenomena in haunted locations across America. Physical medium Amy Allen has no prior introduction to the homeowners. She sees the spirits, can communicate with them, and walks the house on camera to share what she sees and hears. Meanwhile, without contact with the medium, retired NYPD homicide detective Steve DeShavi researches the history of the home using more traditional detective methods. Sometimes he discovers that there was a death in the home, or land was originally Native American land where a battle had taken place. The homeowner, the detective, and the medium meet at a table in the end to reveal what they found and share it with one another for the first time, including a sketch that an artist drew depicting exactly what has concerned the medium the most. The pictures are never a comfortable thing to view when you begin to understand what else is living in your very own home. Frank McAndrew, PhD, explains in an article from Psychology Today, "From a psychological point of view, the standard features of haunted houses trigger feelings of dread because they push buttons in our brains that evolved long before houses even existed. These alarm buttons warn us of potential danger and motivate us to proceed with caution." Haunted houses give us the creeps, not because they pose a clear threat to us, but rather because it is unclear whether they represent a threat or not. This ambivalence leaves you frozen in place, wallowing in unease. For example, it would be considered bizarre and embarrassing to run screaming out of a house that makes you feel uneasy if there is actually nothing to fear. On the other hand, it could be perilous to ignore your intuition and remain in a place that is dangerous. These are the psychological mechanisms behind the feeling of being creeped out. They may be useful if they help you maintain vigilance when threat is uncertain. They also help you manage the balance between self-preservation and self-presentation. In other words, presenting yourself in a socially desirable way. Large deserted buildings that once held a lot of people can provide attractive venues for a good haunting, especially if they housed troubled populations like prisons, mental hospitals, or orphanages. However, the rest of this essay will be devoted to what goes on in good old-fashioned single-family haunted houses, because just as human psychology can explain what makes a haunted house so scary, it also provides the perfect guide to making one ourselves. The building blocks for such a home can be sorted into just a few categories, and the more of these ingredients a house possesses, the more terrifyingly haunted it will be. Evolutionary psychologists have proposed the existence of agent detection mechanisms, or processes that have evolved to protect us from harm at the hands of predators and enemies. If you're walking through the woods alone at night and hear the sound of something rustling in the bushes, you'll respond with a heightened level of arousal and attention. You'll behave as if there's a willful agent present who is about to do you harm. If it turns out to be a gust of wind or a stray cat, you lose little by overreacting, but if you fail to activate the alarm response and a true threat is present, well, the cost of your miscalculation could be very high. Thus, we have evolved to err on the side of detecting threats in ambiguous situations. He later goes on to say, research has consistently shown that we need more personal space while seated than while standing, more space when we are in the corner of a room rather than in the center of it, and more space in rooms with low ceilings. We feel uncomfortable when our personal space is violated anywhere, but especially so in situations where we feel as if escape will become difficult. Also, the darkness and confusing layout of a house may cause us to get lost, or at the very least, slow us down. Escape could further be impeded by hedges or iron fences or crumbling stairways, all of which are featured prominently in Hollywood haunted houses. Speaking of Hollywood, the typical haunted house is large, dark, surrounded by overgrown vegetation, and full of surprising architectural features, such as secret rooms and closets under staircases. Attics and basements are also must-have items, and of course, spiderwebs, bats, rats, and insects make nice accessories. Most haunted houses have some sort of legend associated with them. It usually involves a story about a grisly death or accident. There may even be a history of suicide and murder. The older the place is, the more likely we are to perceive it as haunted because there's been much more time for tragic things to have taken place. Stimuli such as moldy odors, antiquated Victorian or Gothic architecture, wood interiors, and old portraits on the wall reinforce an ambiance of great age. assuming that the house is no longer occupied, signs of life suddenly interrupted and frozen in time only amplify the fear factor. For example, remnants of a half-eaten meal on a kitchen table or clothing laid out on a bed waiting for a homeowner who has apparently vanished without warning create a frightening ambiguity about what may have taken place in the house. There are bonus points awarded if the house is conveniently located next to or on top of an old cemetery or burial ground. Such feelings of discomfort are symptomatic of the fact that we are constantly, even if unconsciously, scanning our surroundings and assessing our ability to flee if it should become necessary. Consequently, a haunted house is our worst nightmare. He so thoroughly covers all the main spooky triggers that come from a deep place within us, right?
Thank you.
In 2016, the family put the house and the land on the market for sale, but the buyer wanted the lakefront property and not the house. Upon realization, the family donated it to Marion County, who paid $215,000 to float it across the lake and preserve this historical home. 3 years later, my special guest, Dr. Christy Sumner, and her sisters became the first paranormal investigators allowed to investigate this house.
So walking into this house for the first time, for me personally, was amazing. It was literally stepping back in time to 1935. Because when you walk in and you open the door, there's this grand living room, and the furniture that is in the living room currently is some of the same furniture that was there in 1935. Inside the dining room, the table, the chairs, you look around and there's bullet holes in the wall that have not been patched. Some were, but some have not been. So walking into it was literally a step into history for me. They actually did reenactments at the house. So people from Marion County, the Marion County Sheriff's Office, would go in and recreate the actual shootout. So we would go to those a couple of times. I always told myself if there was a way to get into that house, I wanted to do it. So the shootout happened January 16th, 1935. We wanted to encompass the anniversary of the shootout. So what we did is we went in and we set up equipment on the night of January 15th, and that was the 84th anniversary of the shootout. So we set up that equipment and we left it to run by itself overnight. The house was locked, and the house sits on, now it sits on about 40 acres. Alone, there are no street lights, there are no roads. You have to have a four-wheel drive vehicle to get back to it because it's on Florida sand. So getting to the house, it's very tough. So we knew that we were able to control for any of those environmental factors, i.e. light or noise. We set up those night vision video cameras, we set up voice recorders. And then what I had also done is I recorded questions onto another voice recorder. So when we left, I hit play, and those questions ran for about 45 minutes because I wanted to see if there was any reaction to a voice being in the house, but not so much a person being in the house. The next day, which would have been the day of the shootout, January 16th, we let it run till probably about 11 a.m. And then we went and collected all of that equipment. To us, it was very telling because I'll be honest with you, when we first set this up, I didn't think we were going to get very much. I really had no expectations. I just wanted to do the investigation. But when we started having noises and bangs and what sounded like a chair being scraped across the floor and a guy saying, "Get out," when I know that there's absolutely nobody in the house, that to me was very, very compelling. And so that led us to go back that second night, about a week later, and actually do a full-scale investigation with my sister and I.
Tell me about the history with you and this house.
The house is located in Ocklawaha, Florida, which is literally a one streetlight town. My grandparents actually lived about 5 miles from the house. Growing up, when we would visit Nana and Granddaddy and we would drive into Ocklawaha to get the mail or whatever, we would pass by that house. Growing up, we would always hear stories of Ma Barker and Fred Barker, and so we would pass the house and my Nana would say, "That's where the Barker guys were killed. That's where the FBI was." Up until the mid-1990s, they actually did reenactments at the house. People from Marion County, the Marion County Sheriff's Office, would go in and recreate the actual shootout. So we would go to those a couple of times. We had a picnic and made a day of it. So for me, the historical aspect of it was so immense that I always told myself if there was a way to get into that house, I wanted to do it. So in 2016, the family wanted to sell the property and the new owners did not want the house. They were going to demolish it. So Marion County said, "Let us take it. We'll pay you $250,000 to move it off the land and we'll take it and move it to a new location." They've put it on a barge and they floated it across Lake Weir to where it sits right now. So when it got there, I approached Marion County and I said, "This is who I am. This is what we do. Please let my group go into this house." And they were all about it. So very accommodating and very welcoming and really kind of appreciative of what we were trying to do because there's always been legends and stories related to this house.
How does one become a paranormal investigator? That's not a typical career path.
for myself and my team members. It's a funny story. It actually started as a girls' trip. My sisters and I, we live in different parts of the country, and we had the opportunity to go to Moundsville, West Virginia, and a family friend was a member of the board of Moundsville Penitentiary. So he said, why don't y'all come up and stay the weekend and investigate the prison and stay the night in the prison and see kind of what you think. So we always told ourselves if we had the opportunity to conduct a paranormal investigation that we would do it. And so we jumped on that opportunity, and it was a very rudimentary investigation. We had a few night vision video cameras, a few voice recorders, and we really went in with a healthy dose of skepticism. The evidence that we found that night was so compelling that we left that investigation and really wanted to formalize our group. So that was in 2013. And in 2014, we started doing residential and more commercial investigations. We formalized our group and has just been going all over the country ever since.
I'm trying to envision how this goes at a cocktail party. Hi, I'm Christina. I'm a realtor. Nice to meet you. And you say, hello, I'm Christy. I'm a paranormal investigator. You win for the coolest job during introductions, hands down.
When you tell people that you're a paranormal investigator, it either runs the gamut of they look at you like you have two heads or they want to tell you their ghost story. There's very little in between with that, but my sisters and I have always been very curious. We've always been very strong women as well. And we have that academic, that research background. We would watch the ghost adventures and the ghost hunters and all of that. And we would say to ourselves, you know, why didn't they spend more time here? Why didn't they ask these questions? When we had the opportunity to really formalize this team, we decided we wanted a very distinct style. Very research-based. So we always take a day tour before we go to an investigation to ascertain any type of noise pollution, light pollution. Are there neighbors? Are there dogs? Is there airplane traffic going overhead? Anything that could be causing what would be considered the haunting of the location. We really do put our scientific background to use with this, and it just leads us to explore that even further. For us, the history is really the driving factor in what we do, because without the history, there would be no paranormal. I mean, not many people can say they've spent the night at a lighthouse or a Revolutionary War fort or the Villisca Axe murder house or a prison or a jail, but we can say we've done that. And so to really immerse ourselves in that history, to, you know, touch the doorknobs that Lizzie Borden was touching, or to put your hand on a bullet hole that was caused by the FBI and the Ma Barker shootout, it really makes that history come alive for us. And that's what we want to relay to our audience.
As a very interesting side note, I have never had technical difficulties in editing ever for any episode like I have had with this one. I find it interesting that I'm having strange occurrences happening in an episode about strange occurrences. I had all the vocals unexplainably slide, so the edits were not how I edited them last night, and I had to go back in my time machine on my iMac to pull them from a few days back. And this has happened like 4 times in one day. How did they change when I did not change them? Like whole tracks. And the Ma Barker static piece that I was going to include keeps popping up as not found. I texted Dr. Christy Sumner and had to share, and she replied with, whoa, that is crazy. You are the second podcaster this week that I've interviewed with, and both of you had had issues. The true crime podcaster, the true crime podcaster said the exact same thing. I have been doing this years without issues, is what he told me yesterday. Both of you wanted me to talk on the Ma Barker house, she said. Just tell Ma Barker that she needs to back off and let you do your work. 20 minutes later, I had Dr. Christy Sumner's vocals disappear from the 11-minute mark to the 17-minute mark. Thankfully, I operate on an iMac, so I have grappled with this episode, and it is not everything I had hoped it would be, but alas, I have put 3 extra days into trying to just get this thing done and exported, and so... Happy Halloween. And because of the odd topic of this particular episode, I only have one question to ask yourself about your home space and your reason. Do I have more than one way out of my house? What if the front door is on fire, or blocked by a fallen tree, or something worse? Do I have another way out? Is it open and easily accessible? As always, I will cite my sources in the podcast notes, and you can find Dr. Sumner's bio, website, and more information to easily connect there as well. If you know someone thinking of buying a home or listing their home in the greater Metro Portland, Oregon area, send them this podcast and let them know that I'm a realtor. They can quite literally get to know me first before making a final decision about who they want to work with. Subscribe to this podcast so they automatically download as new episodes are released. Yay for one less thing to remember. I will include a link to a video created by the Soul Sisters that highlights the home's history and another specific to their paranormal findings. Join the Home Space and Reason Facebook group to pose home-related and home functionality questions and chime in with like-minded people. All my social media links are in the podcast notes, making it easy for you to follow along. Work with me by jumping over to my website, spaceandreason.com. Thanks for sitting in on this spooky conversation about the haunting of homes. I had so much fun producing this episode. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did, and I'll meet you back here for the next episode.